All right, folks, happy new year and welcome back to another edition of the flagstick.com Tea Talk podcast. Year three, 2 years in lockdowns and pandemics and whatever we want to call it. But maybe this is our year. Steph Tudor here, my co-host, Scott McLeod. Scotty, happy new year. How are you?
I'm pretty good. Happy new year, bud. Can't believe another year is upon us. And like everything else, there's a lot of uncertainty. But hey, what the hell? All we can do is just plow forward and do what we can and maybe entertain a few people and chat a little bit of golf, right?
Yeah, I mean, we're going to get into some different topics today. And there's, as we record this, some news going in Ontario that we'll get into at some point, I'm sure. But what'd you get up to this Christmas? Did you get anything golf related?
No, not at all. Actually, short of a Apple Watch, which maybe I'll have some golf apps or stuff on there. But otherwise, it was a pretty quiet holiday season. So which was fine. Obviously played a little bit of indoor golf, but not a lot. I actually put down the clubs for a fair bit. That was about it. Not really a lot going on.
Yeah, I ended up getting, my wife got me from this company, I think they're called Short Game Gains, this indoor putting setup. Comes with like a laser and a mirror and gates to putt through. And
nice.
So that's what I got going, working on the putting because, you know, can't really work on the swing right now, which we'll get into in a bit. So yeah, it was a very golf gift. Kind of haven't really thought much about golf, really, sadly, because of, you know, there isn't been golf on TV outside of, say, the PNC, which I'm sure we'll bring up. But yeah, I feel you. We're getting back, though. This week we are back. Tournament of Champions, which is, you know, usually pretty Mickey Mousey, but hey, it's golf and it's on TV. So let's get back to watching it.
I think we needed that little bit of a break. We talked about that. Everything is sort of getting saturated or whatever. And I mean, it's hard, you know, when everybody's kind of sort of pounding it 12 months a year about golf. I think 11 and a half months is just enough. That's fine. We needed that little break, and that kind of gets us maybe, you know, reinvigorated, maybe reset some storylines and get things rolling for this year.
Well, it's funny that you say that. I actually, I don't know if it's a resolution or not. One of my goals is to actually do a little bit more writing, actually contribute to this quote unquote journalistic golf life that I apparently am in. And I actually started an article literally about that. And I probably got a couple paragraphs in, and it was about, you know, the oversaturation. And I was like, I'm just adding oversaturation to the oversaturation market. And I just deleted it all. And shut it off. And I was like, okay, we'll start later. We'll start next year. So I've been kind of thinking of some different things to go through, but that's like where my head was at, is like, other people have written this. So like, Am I adding anything new to say? And are we really adding anything new ever at this point? But you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think you can, but I think, you know, everybody gets so caught up in, you know, we'll call it algorithms and sort of things, that they just feel they have to churn out content as much as possible. And I think everybody forgets that, you know, you're allowed to have thoughtful content, really. I mean, that's what it really amounts to. But everybody's so caught up in the fact that, oh, I've got to post, I've got to keep posting, I've got to keep doing stuff. You need some time in between. Otherwise, you know what? We'd have a daily podcast. But you know what? We know there's not really anything, you know, decent that you could actually come up with every single day. If somebody thinks they can, it's going to be a short podcast for sure. But I think that's sort of where we get to. And there's so much noise that's out there right now that it's really hard to dig through and find the stuff that's actually worthy of our attention. And, you know, we try to manage to do that every week, but man, you're right. There's a lot out there, and, you know, there's many articles. I think I've started the same over the years where I thought, there's not really anything I'm contributing here. So, you know, turn a corner and try something else. So it's not new. So,
yeah, exactly. I love it. Well, let's get into the things that did happen over the last, what, 2-3 weeks we've been off, where we'll give a birdie, a par, a bogey, an honorable mention to over the last month, that was, as we'll call it. So why don't you, where do you want to start? You want to start it up? You got one off the top of your head that you really want to dive into.
Yeah, there wasn't anything really burning for me or whatever, but you know, I had to actually shake the cobwebs to kind of think of what really happened in the last month or so. But I know one thing that was significant that happened is that you know, a lot of people are maybe aware of Jeff Ogilvie, the former US Open champion and Australian player, fine player, how he's been very thoughtful about you know, what he's written and contributed to the world on golf and some different aspects of the game and how he thinks it should go moving forward. And one area where he's been contributing a little bit of that was with the Fire Pit Collective, you know, the group obviously that we're familiar with Matt Ginella, Alan Shipnick, Ryan French, you know, just that group there. And you know what, he's now got a formal relationship with that group. I mean, they've got a foundation that's going. This sort of expands them from a US-based organization to think about things that are happening in the southern hemisphere. And I think he's going to be a wise voice, and any opportunity to get more content out of that brain that he has, I think will be good for golf in general, and get us away from that churn of just crap, and get us to some thoughtful, insightful stuff that will actually, you know, has a potential to push the game forward where it should be going.
Yeah, I think that's the best part about Jeff, is that I don't want to say he doesn't have a filter, but he speaks his mind on the right topics, and he does it really well. So to be able to have a place where you easily can find that, it's not just, you know, locked in Australia.
Yeah,
I would love to. I can't wait to see that. And I like, my birdie is actually on the Fire Pit Collective, and just the content they've put out recently, but especially the article Ryan French put out called "Most of Us Know a John Daly," and it was about his aunt Helen and her long battle with alcoholism. And it came from somebody tweeting him, like, you know, imagine how many wins John Daly would have if he didn't have all these issues, right? And just like the idea that, like, you're not just your addiction or the addictions that you might have. And, you know, there's an actual person there that might be addicted to something. I thought it was a beautiful article. And with John Daly, obviously the reason that came up is they picked up the win at the PNC with his son, and he's been more vocal about, obviously, he's drinking again and all these different things. And that doesn't need to be the story. Why can't the story of the PNC be John Daly and his son won the PNC and it was a good father-son tournament to watch, right? It doesn't need to be, oh, you know, his Taco Bell order after he was drinking. Yeah. That's not, like, that's the easy story to tell.
That's the clickbait crap is what that
is. Yeah, it's the clickbait crap. It's the frat boy podcast crap, right? Like, I get that's part of his personality, but like the stuff I liked was, you know, he was talking about texting Tiger when he first got in a car crash, and he was one of the only people that actually was keeping up on Tiger, him and obviously Justin Thomas. And Tiger, I guess, approached him at the PNC and thanked him for that. I'm sure Tiger didn't respond once, but John just sends it. Like, those are the, I think he's probably one of those guys that's just so misunderstood, not only by himself, but like the public. And I think this article just lets you all know, is like, I think most people with addictions, whether they're in the public eye or not, are quite misunderstood. So I thought it was a great article. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, you know what? I think that that sort of takes us down a different road when we start to think about athletes. Again, we see the world through this magnifying glass that is social media, and we hear people with, you know, hot takes in 288 characters and on players, and you know, they have a perception of who they are and what they're all about. And I think if people take the time to dig a little bit deeper, and I think it's going to take journalists willing to go and do that, and more of them, to realize this is the important things that we need to hear about. We need to hear stories that have a little bit more substance. Realize your audience is actually fairly smart. You know, just don't go to the lowest common denominator. And while a lot of people will go that way just because they want, you know, clicks and likes and things like that, taking the time to actually do some work, go find a story, dig a little bit deeper, you're probably going to end up with something that's much better as far as content is concerned. You're actually going to contribute something to the fabric of the game more than anything. So having thoughtful voices in the game is very important. And while it's fun even to have a little glib comment here and there about something, in the end, it's better off that, you know, we have less of that and more that's actually telling real stories.
I agree. And I think the small thing on that is the audience you're telling these stories for, they have a tie to, like, the people that are tied to John Daly's partying are going to outgrow that story. And there's not necessarily going to be another John Daly. And if that's the market you want to be in, where you're the frat boy journalist, right? Yeah. Like, then what are you going to do when those people, you know, grow up and they don't necessarily want that information anymore? Do you find that same audience, like you're getting older too, or your audience is staying the same age? Are you Matt McConaughey there? Like, you know, like, and what was that movie? I'm drawing a blank there, but you know what I'm talking about. Drive me crazy, but you know what I mean? It's just, I don't know, but maybe that, hey, they're making money. So at the end of the day, if it's not broke, don't fix it, I guess. I don't know. It's not for me. I've kind of moved past that, but that's social media. And that's why we have things like the PIP, I guess, in place, is because social media is a great way to grow your game, apparently. And I give my par for the last month to the PIP. And why I give it a par is Phil Mickelson and Tiger Woods are going to win the PIP 1-2 or whatever.
Apparently,
Tiger Woods posted one swing and played in one tournament and somehow wins this. Phil has always been vocal. Like, did we learn anything from the PIP at all, that the two faces of the game for the last 30 years, 25 years are still the two most important faces of the game and the voices that need to be heard and the clicks that get clicked? Like, do we really need the PIP to, couldn't they just pay these guys the money up front without this PIP? I don't know. I just don't get the PIP.
All I learned was based on social media that, you know, Phil's ego is even bigger than I ever imagined. And, you know, while he might be making some of the comments sort of tongue in cheek, you know, to players and replying and stuff like that, it's pretty bad. Like, I get it. I'm glad now at least that he's talking about, you know, that he's going to be donating the money and stuff like that. That's what he's talking about. But again, you know, we're talking more about the PIP than maybe the effects of it and things that, you know, players could be doing with some of this money and things as well, and how it could make the game better.
Yeah. And I don't think it's a bad, for the record, I don't think paying the people that are the faces of your game.
No, that's fine. Yeah.
It's a bad thing.
Sure.
And I don't think, I don't even know if I'm on the side that this money should necessarily go into these lower tours, because without these big faces of those higher end, like, those lower tours don't have any budget, right? Like, they still are putting money in the pocket. Should they get more? Like, there should be some guarantee to those big names, but I don't know if this is the best way to do it. I just don't get the PIP, and that's why I'm just on this par. I don't think it changed the game for me at all.
No, I think the whole process is the problem more than anything, in my opinion. As a result of it, you're right. I mean, the players, you know, they're out there earning. They're out there. The big names are bringing attention to the game. I just don't think the PIP needed to be public, really, in the end. And I mean, I guess they're not going to expose it, but I just don't think it should have been exposed in any possible way. And, you know, the tour just kind of taking care of that. Maybe they're trying to be transparent, but I mean,
there's other ways they can do that.
Totally.
Less jet ski accidents, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, exactly. So just, you know, I think if they just take care of it another way, rewarded their top players, left it at that, and not made it a public spectacle, then we probably would think more of it than anything.
I agree. What's your par for the week?
My par, I'm sort of all over the place, especially with 2022 upon us now, and, you know, been dealing with a lot of golf courses lately and talking to a number of owners, managers, and, you know, talking about their business models and how they're going to change going forward. And I'm of two minds here. I know there's adjustments that are necessary in the golf business as far as golf courses are concerned. They're models that they need for survival, things that maybe they weren't able to take advantage of in other lean years, adjustments in prices and so forth, changes in their membership models. But I'm also seeing, you know, some golf courses maybe taking it too far extreme, and maybe doing some things that are based on just last year or the year before rather than long term.
Examples, like any examples of stuff you're seeing?
Well, let's say a golf course, and I won't name a specific course, but maybe a golf course for not taking in junior members. They're deciding that they're not going to do junior members. Again, it's their business, their model, whatever they want to do. I'm just concerned for, you know, a club that maybe makes that decision, that, you know, it's based on just what's happened in the last couple of years rather than what they need to be doing for the next 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, 30 years for their success. I think
always, how much forecasting are you doing there? Right. Are you doing some more, you know, reaction versus proaction?
And we've had that in various aspects when the game was, you know, on the down, on the up, and people are making decisions based on that. And I realize those are real life situations that they're in at that time, and they feel they have to make the decisions. But I always thought that, you know, once we got a surge in the game, like we are having right now, it would put golf courses in a better position to maybe sort of take the time to think of their model long term. So this is why I'm at a par with it. I see some good things happening. I see some courses going, hey, let's invest back into our golf courses. Let's think about our programming. Let's change up our membership models and do some things that are going to give us long-term success and satisfy our customers for the next 20, 30 years. But I also see the other ones where they're going, oh, okay, well, we got to really take advantage of what's happening right now to the detriment for what they'll feel long-term. So I'm just a little concerned for the industry in a whole that, you know, a blessing that we've had for the industry in the last couple of years could end up being a curse for some people.
Yeah. I love that thought process, especially like with juniors. If you have a junior coming to a private club early, right, they learn, they grow up there and they learn to take care of it and learn what it's like to be at a club. And that, like, they almost, there's a pride of being at this private club that they want to stay there. Totally. Once they get their own money, right? And it's probably like, and I have friends that, you know, play at private clubs that probably it's a little bit more than they should be spending on golf, but they grew up there. They want to, that's where they want to play. Those are the people they want to be around. It's a lot harder to build that kind of, well, it's not a lot harder, but it's almost impossible to build that, you know,
the connection as an adult, right?
Yeah. And that, like, you know, for me, there's private club in the area where, like, you know, it's a private club, but I have no real connection to it that, right, like, you know what, it's not worth that extra money, where get the people in at that junior age so they can build that connection that they want to be there until they're 60. But again, if the golf industry was known for forward thinking on these type of things, we wouldn't be having this conversation. Now, there is a golf club that I read about today that is doing some very forward thinking stuff. This club out of Minnesota, I believe it's called Little Falls Country Club. And I'm not an expert on the story. I'll be completely transparent. I was like you, totally forgot about anything that happened in the last month of golf. And what do I do whenever I do that? I go to Golf WRX and I find some articles and some, see what's on the forum. But this club, I guess, has adjusted their membership that they'll, I think what my understanding is, the cost of the members that are considered adults over 18 are going up. That means they can actually pay the staff there more money that really haven't apparently been able to get raises in the last couple of years, so they can, you know, continue to provide it. But what they're also doing with that is they're actually making golf for anyone under 18 completely free. And that is I think that's awesome. I don't know how they're pulling that off completely. I haven't looked through the numbers again.
Yeah,
just read an article real quick.
Yeah, I wonder, like, I wonder if there's any restrictions or anything there, or they're, you know, they maybe they budgeted as far as the higher fees for the other members, maybe that's supplementing the junior side of it. But whatever the case, that does exactly what you're talking about. That creates a connection. And I think I mentioned it before, you know, in St. Andrews, if you're under 16, you live in the town of St. Andrews, you play golf for free on all their golf courses until you're 16 years old. So that creates a lifelong golfer, a connection to the game. And as we know, anything that you do, it's getting past the initial barrier that is the hardest thing to do. And you can make a lifelong golfer out of that. And that's cool to see.
Yeah, I think their thought process behind it makes sense, is that, and this was my honorable mention for the week, is I'm going to give it a minus 10 on the first tee.
I love it. Handicap. A tour championship I'm leading.
Yeah, tour championship I'm leading. And they're leading the thought process of going forward. I need to give credit to the actual person that they were talking to. I can't even find them. What a terrible, just city administrator. Oh, John Rattermach, I guess, is the guy that was chatting about it. He said, he believes it's an investment in their community. If you get people hooked on golf, at least they'll be exposed to golf when they're in their younger age, and then they'll come back when they're older, capable to play, and they'll want to actually be at our course. Literally what I just said without actually reading this article prior. So like, I think I love where your par is at, where it's like some places are doing it right, some places we're not too sure if they're doing it right. I think we can both agree that this place is probably doing it right. In the end, maybe they're going to lose some money, but hey, in the long term, maybe it's a gain at that point. So I like it. What's your bogey for the week?
My bogey for the week lends itself back to the father and son event there that you're talking about with Daly. And obviously there was a lot of discussion, a lot of social media regarding Tiger and Charlie Woods. It was great to see. It was fun to see them play well. Great to see a father and son out there playing, let alone, you know, one of the greatest players out there. But the follow-up to that was so much content related to Charlie Woods, where people were like, oh, this kid's going to be bombing it 300 yards. This kid is going to win the Masters. This kid is going to win, you know, outstrip his dad for wins on the PGA Tour. Like, settle down. Like, seriously, like, just let it happen organically, people. I mean, there's no sure thing. Tiger will tell you that. Tiger will tell you that. Look things that have happened in his life. I mean, how many wins would he have if, you know, he didn't have various injuries and incidences and accidents and things over the years? There are no guarantees. Enjoy watching this kid play golf. Enjoy him, you know, maybe playing more junior golf, maybe playing college golf, maybe turning pro. We don't know that. But to sit there and put the weight of the world on him and say, this is going to happen, I guarantee you, if you look through every sport in the world, the best 12-year-olds at any sport will not always be the number one in their sport by the time they get to be an adult. It just does not happen that way. It's not a linear progression. And I think if people are doing that, I think they're just being foolish, putting that expectation on him and saying it's going to happen. It might happen, but it might happen for any of the other 7 billion people in the country as well, or the world.
Yeah. I like that you said there's every sport you can go through and do that. And let's talk about the positive. His swing is great. He hits it so well. He put on a show on that Sunday, and it was exciting and it was fun to watch. And I agree with you, but like, we don't even need to go to other sports to talk about people that never truly made it and everyone thought they would. Like, what about like Ty Tryon? Like, what was he, 16 when he made his first cut back in the day? Had like a big team around him. Everyone thought this was the next coming of Jesus, or the next Tiger Woods. Never really made it. You could look at Sergio. Yeah, he ended up winning the Masters, but like, when he first came out, everyone put him up on the pedestal, and like, nobody's gonna not take Sergio's career, right? But sure. You know, like it that could happen. John McDermott, remember him? Mm-hmm. Like, I could go through Ricky Barnes. There's so many names you could go through of players that just like everyone put all this pressure on, and then they just never really did it.
And I mean, those are players that are already accomplished and they're already getting themselves on the tour, let alone somebody who's 12 years old and, you know, ranked in the top 100 of his age group in the state of Florida. Well, yes, you know what? He's going to have a lot more opportunities than a lot of other kids are going to be. He's a privileged kid. They know that. Tiger knows that. He's allowing him to have those opportunities. Will that contribute to his potential success? Certainly it could. I mean, it's no different than anyone else. If you have an opportunity to, you know, do something, you have a better chance of having success at it. But there's no guarantees in it. And who knows, 2 years from now, he could hate golf. He could want to be doing something else. So there's no guarantees, people. So making abject statements or just saying, you know, it's absolute statements saying it's going to happen. Sorry, I don't want to hear it.
No, I mean, but even on top of the, like, having every opportunity, like, I'm sure Gary Nicklaus had every opportunity out there. And, you know, I don't have his stats in front of me, but there's a lot to be desired, I would assume, without even opening up the horrible PGA Tour website. So I think it's a great call out. I think people get excited. In the social media world, it's easy to throw something out there and then just forget about it and like, oh, it's just a tweet, I can delete it.
Right.
There's not articles being written about
it. No.
I mean, maybe there are, but like from reputable journalists, no reputable journalists putting their name on, hey, here's my prediction for Charlie Woods to win 18 majors and pass his dad's 84 wins. That's my prediction. He's going to finish with 84. I
don't know. Okay.
But yeah, so that's a good call out. What's your other honorable mention for the week though?
Yeah.
I know you had a couple bogeys.
This week. I did. You know what? I love our friends at Golf Canada. They do some great things in this country, but one thing that I'd like to see a little bit more of is especially in some of their marketing materials, a little bit more attention to the people that are dues paying members of the association. So, you know, I saw a Happy New Year tweet that came from them with a really nice graphic and it showed 13 PGA and LPGA tour players, the players that will have status on tour in 2022. The only problem is this: Golf Canada represents more than golf pros at the top level of the game. In fact, they represent way more amateurs, way more juniors, way more, you know, other people. I would just like to see some of that attention. I get it. I get the hero game, you know, put it out there. People will like that again on social and things like that. I would have loved to seen the same graphic, the exact same graphic. And I'll make it known here that I will have this discussion with probably Terry Lennick or Ty Costigan, guys from Golf Canada. It would have been really cool to see that graphic with 13 ordinary average golfers on that Happy New Year element. These dues paying members that have been out there for years, contributing money to Golf Canada rather than just another, you know, thing with 13 tour pros where everybody's going to get excited because they know who Brooke Henderson is and they know who Corey Connors is.
Yeah, I saw it too. And I didn't have probably as big of a reaction right off the bat as you did. But like, my first thought, there's a couple people on here that I just don't link as much to Golf Canada. When I think Golf Canada, like I think, you know, Corey Connors, I do think of Mackenzie Hughes, I do think of a Brooke there, because there are ties there, right? Like,
right.
Like I love Adam Hadwin, and I think his wife is hilarious on Twitter. If you're not following her, yeah, you should. I have almost zero ties to him in Canada, really. Like, I don't see it. Like, he doesn't do a lot in Canada from my, like, he's not really tied to Golf Canada, or else he hasn't been in a long time. I think this was a very easy one to put out there, but at the end of the day, I think you're right. Is that like, we're not marketing people either. Does putting these 12 people on here make anybody go, oh, I need to join over, you know, putting any Gary or Meredith or Susie on there, whoever else doing these things? Like, I don't think it changes anything really. I don't know. I would love to hear the why behind it. I know people from Golf Canada listen to this podcast. I would love to understand. Maybe I'm sure we're wrong and we're overthinking it. Maybe there could be two different posts. I just want to understand the idea.
Yeah. And I'm not saying that it doesn't have to be that. I get it. They're after engagement. They're after engagement. Yeah. Engagement is important for them to, you know, move forward. And it helps them do things like, you know, attract sponsors and things that will support the programs and do other things. So I get that. And I'm not saying they shouldn't have done that. I'm just saying it would have been cool to see from a parallel standpoint, more involvement and more focus on, you know, Golf Canada members, the average member. That would have been a really cool graphic. If I'm sitting in a room and I'm going, hey, what am I going to do for a Happy New Year? Hey, let's do one with this. But hey, you know what? Why don't we take the 13? Don't just do an amateur one and do a pro one. Let's mix them in together and have people ask, oh, who's that person next to Brooke Henderson or whatever? And you go,
who's the lady wearing jeans?
That's Meredith from Estevan or whatever like this. That would be cool.
There's Gary with his double rum and coke on the 17th fairway at Beechwood or wherever, Niagara, like in the middle of January. Just really quickly, did you see people were playing Hamilton Golf and Country Club about a week ago?
No, I didn't see that, but I will tell you, I saw yesterday, and I was going back and forth with Terry Hashimoto from Body Track. He was out playing in PEI yesterday at Belfast Highland Green. So and there's people playing in Niagara and so, but I didn't see it at Ancaster, but it's pretty cool.
Pretty cool. All right, I got a final bogey and then we'll get to some other topics. My bogey goes to this yet another Ontario government lockdown, and I'm not an expert, and what I've learned about COVID is nobody knows what the hell they're talking about. and everybody's just guessing. And
that's the only guarantee, right?
Yeah, including our government at this point. But
the only certainty is uncertainty.
Exactly. I'm giving a bogey because in the latest lockdown, obviously, they've closed gyms and different indoor sports and things like that. And that affects the golf industry, affects you directly and your income directly. And it affects golfers that want to improve their game directly. And that it's kind of the only, you know, output for them right now is to be able to go because, you know, they can't go and play hockey or whatever it is. That's unsafe. At least one-on-one, you know, it's easier to do some tracking. There's a way to do this safe. And the fact that you can't host lessons in your garage, technically, it's shitty. And I don't know the answer. I don't think anyone's going to know the answer, but there's somewhere between the economy and the health and what is the answer in between. But I don't think this government has any idea what they're doing. I think they just, I saw a meme, you know, that scene from Austin Powers where he's backing the wall and then fronting in the wall. He's trying to do like 100 points. That's the government, right? I feel frustrated for the people that depend on indoor facilities for their income. I feel frustrated for you, especially, you know, it's even worse when you see, you know, people that have invested a ton of money like yourself into a facility that you can teach people. And not only that, like, I think for you, and maybe I'm putting words into your mouth, like, I think you're a coach first, and the fact of just coaching and not being able to do what you love to do probably stings even more than the income going into your pocket. Right. And it's just, it's shitty. And if I could give it 100 bogeys, I would, but I guess my only glimmer of hope is that I'd rather be now and let's just get this and that we're not doing this in the middle of our golf season again.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, you know, there's so many aspects of this that are very difficult mentally, and you're right. It's less about income for me. That's going to be different for other businesses and their business models and the difficulties that it's going to cause for those facilities, the workers of those facilities and so forth. But you're right. It's that connection and coaching with players, and you just get disappointed knowing that, you know, the athletes and young, especially young athletes that you work with, teens and, you know, high school students, college students or whatever, that they can't train and they can't go to the opportunity. And while it is small in the, you know, in the scale or the scope of everything that's out there from a, you know, health and so forth and safety, it's still, obviously, if we think about it for our industry, as far as the golf industry, it's still a bad position that all of a sudden these courses are in. We have a lot more people at these indoor facilities and golf courses that have indoor, you know, training. You know, they have a lot more members that are not going away. They're not traveling down south. And, you know, that was their expectation. A lot of golf courses in around Canada and Ontario specifically, you know, have invested a lot of money and time and effort in creating indoor facilities, you know, especially this year. I would probably say it's triple the amount that I've ever seen as far as the number of indoor facilities at clubs. And they're just not going to be able to operate for at least the next 21 days. And, you know, that obviously causes... it's a whole set of grief, and you know, that's all we can say for now, really. I mean, you know, we'll be talking about it again and again, I'm sure.
No, and we have Tomo on, and this is a previously recorded interview that you did from TaylorMade again. And you look at that, like they're launching a new club, right? And and what's the way that people get the best out of that club is going and getting a fitting. The best time, like this is the time where sales skyrocket in the golf industry, is now until basically April, because people get the itch. They want to go get fit. They go to hit balls, whether it's at your big box store, it's at, you know, the golf course that they have a net set up with a quad on the floor to do the fittings, and they can't even do that. Right. Yeah. And it's just, I don't know. I don't have an answer. We clearly don't have an answer. Nobody knows what the hell's going on anymore. And I think that's the answer. And like, it's the golf industry has like such, it does have a little effect, as you highlighted. Like you're a parent of a child that goes to a school, and a spouse of a teacher. Yeah. And a day ago, they were going to school and today they're not. And it's just like, what is going on? It feels like we're flipping a coin to make this. We're using a magic eight ball each day. you know, to make a decision.
It's just so much turmoil. And I think that's the difficulty, is that, you know, you'd like to have something that you'd like to be able to stand on some ground that's not moving. You know what I mean? You know, I like concrete under my feet. I don't like quicksand under my feet. And that seems to be the way of late. And, you know, it's just going to make it more and more difficult. And like you said, you know, for the golf industry right now, they're about to launch a lot of products. We're going to see a lot of introductions this week. It just puts a different feel on it. I mean, December itself, I mean, I was supposed to go to a number of fittings and a number, a couple of events down south, test out new products, do some things. That became a lot harder. Some did some more virtual things, including the interview that we're going to hear today. It just, you know, it's kind of a little bit of a bummer, especially when some things have been, you know, worked on for ages. And you'll hear in the interview that's coming up, they started actually production on parts of these drivers for TaylorMade back in October 2020. So trying to ramp up for a date that's now, not knowing what was going to happen, it's just a little bit of a bummer for them and all the other manufacturers that are trying to get ahead of things, you know, after last year when there were so many supply chain issues, and there will be continuing supply chain issues, but try to get some sense of normalcy back to the golf industry.
Yeah, I mean, I think the other thing with that is the frustration of like knowing you have a better product that out there and you can't do anything with it until a year from now, and then from by the time it comes out, they're always thinking forward. They must have something else that they are building that they also believe is better than that product because of these supply chain issues. It's the world is just an interesting place. You got me thinking though about equipment and not a lot of, usually right around now is you get all the changes of people signing with new companies and things. Yeah. I haven't heard anything. Have you heard any changes of players moving to new deals? I've signed, saw Bettinari, did some re-signs, but like, you know, and there, I wish there was a public forum of like where people are a free agent and they were open for contract deals, but like I saw nothing. I've seen nothing.
So it's been a quieter scene than I've seen in any year, really. I don't know what the reasoning is for that. Maybe there's just a lot of contracts that are not expiring. Maybe there's a lot of situations where, you know, people are just sticking it out with certain companies, but there's not as much change certainly this year, at least haven't heard that much. We'll probably see a little bit more this week, maybe, you know, with the Century Tournament of Champions on, we'll get a couple surprises among those players that are there. But certainly not a lot of big changes. That's a great point.
Yeah. Why don't we get into our interview this week though? If we're talking equipment, let's talk about some new equipment. So why don't you give us a quick breakdown and then we'll come back. We got some games we want to play, quick mailbag, different topics we'll get into. But before that, who are we chatting with this week, Scotty?
Yeah, Tomo Bystedt, who's the director of product creation for Metal Woods for TaylorMade Golf. Joined us, you know, he's been on the show before. We sat down in I'm gonna say just the week before Christmas to have a little bit of discussion under embargo at that point, but today is the release of TaylorMade and their new stealth products that we're going to see. And Tomo took us inside the process of designing those products and really gives us a timeline. This products go back almost 20 years as far as development, even before Tomo was there 15 years ago. So I think people will find that there's some details here that are much more than you'll probably hear on the basic things that you're going to see out there in the media this week.
Without further ado, let's hit it. Tomo Bystedt from TaylorMade.
All right, we're going to welcome back Tomo Bystedt to talk a little bit about some of the new woods for TaylorMade this year. A lot of great things happening, a lot of things that have taken a lot of time to happen as well. And I think a lot of people don't really fully appreciate sort of the history behind these new products. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
So first off, you know, we talk about many innovations from your company, and I guess annually we talk about things that, you know, you're progressing and working towards. The project this year, the Stealth Woods, the Carbon Woods, a lot of time to create these, and they have a long history. Why don't you explain a little bit about the timeline and what it's taking to get this product to retail?
Yeah, Scott. So we started this a long, long time ago. I've been a tailman for 15 years, and this was already a thing when I joined back in 2006. So it's been in the work for actually a little bit more than 20 years to some extent. Work started back in 2000, and we had sort of a long journey of sort of ups and downs with this project. And at times it was more of a stealthy, underground project a little bit. And then until really like around 2010, when we started working in earnest on the Japan product that we launched in 2013, that was kind of a concept car for us, a little bit of a test balloon to see how things would work out. And we learned a lot about mass producing carbon faces, things like that as well. And then it kind of went through another phase through the M era of when we were focusing more on Thai, and this went into the background again a little bit. But this last like 3 or 4 years has been intense around making this technology work, and obviously to kind of realize the benefits that we know was inherent in the material, that and kind of being able to extract that performance out of the carbon face has been really what we've been doing for the last 3 or 4 years to sort of fully realize the potential of it. I mean, that's been the fun part of this journey, is really to see it come to life, and not only as a product, but to see the performance that we knew was in the material, that we necessarily weren't seeing that performance, you know, back when we were testing it a long, long time ago. So, yeah, it's been a long time in the works, and a lot of people have been involved with it over those years.
Yeah, when we look at that product, I mean, what really says to you guys this is the time to do it? I mean, are you restricted a little bit about maybe the technology and materials that are available? And even though you're working on it as a project, it's not quite ready for a retail standpoint. When do you get it to a point that it's ready for consumers?
Yeah, so I think I guess there's two parts of that really. One was sort of, when did we realize that, you know, we were going to kind of move away from Thai? I think that one, it's a really interesting one, because I think if you look back at the last 10 years, there's been a lot of development in Thai technology, and you know, a driver that we make today in titanium is very different from what we did 10 years ago and what the competition looked like as well. So there has been advancements. There has been advancements in terms of playability, forgiveness, and even some ball speed gains. But obviously, as a company that's founded in innovation and performance, we had to look ahead and say, what are the next 5-10 years going to look like? Are we still going to be able to see gains? Do we have things in the pipeline for titanium that are going to move the performance significantly forward? And the answer really was no, when we looked at that a few years ago. And so we knew that in order to sort of get onto a new technology curve, we had to invest in carbon and really kind of commit to that technology. Because again, we knew that was the performance was potential was there, but it took a lot of work to make it a reality. Obviously, there's inherent challenges to moving to a brand new technology. We have to figure out how to manufacture it. There's obviously the kind of just concerns about everything: sound, durability, you know, performance. Does it work in all kinds of conditions for different players? And it was really probably 2 years ago when we said, hey, 2022 is going to be the year when this product is going to be launched. We're going to be ready. And we've been building this club for a long time already. So we've actually started production of those faces back in October 2020. That's how long this kind of has been ramping up, just so that we can launch it in a meaningful way. Obviously, being ready for consumers means that on day one, when this is in stores, it's not going to be a mad dash to get the two that stores have. There's going to be a rack full of these clubs, and we want to make sure that anyone who wants to test this and try it out, get fit for it, whatever, that it's available for that person. So yeah, we've been spending a lot of time to ramp up, making sure that, again, we have that supply, and you know, when it hits the market, consumers are going to love it, I think.
So what are the characteristics specifically that make it an improvement, especially in the face and how it's concerned? And also, you know, in comparison, I guess, to other products that you've used before.
Right. Well, there's a lot of the whole carbon technology opens up doors for a bunch of improvements for the club. But really the main one is ball speed. What we're seeing is really a more efficient sort of transition of energy from the club to the ball at the moment of impact. And it has to do really with the fact that the new face is significantly lighter than what faces have been with Thai. We're saving roughly 40% in the weight of the face, equivalent size Thai face to this face. And that's leading to, again, a more efficient collision between the club and the ball. And you see more ball speed, again, still within all the rules of the USGA and the RNA in terms of the CT and the speed of the face. So that's really the exciting part. And you know, having been personally part of a lot of fittings and seen demos and people on TrackMan and GC quads and testing it out there with launch monitors, I'm seeing, you know, nice gains from a lot of people and it's exciting and people are excited to put in play. And obviously we're seeing that this, you know, this weekend with a certain someone at the PNC who's going to be playing it. So it's definitely turning some heads and it's definitely showing up in real numbers, noticeable improvements in performance. And that's what is so exciting for us to witness.
And obviously, when we look at it, you know, we talk about carbon. Carbon's been around for a fair bit of time, but this is not your granddad's or dad's carbon compared to what we saw, you know, in products that came out, you know, over the last couple of decades.
Yeah. No, that's an excellent point. I mean, you know, obviously, carbon isn't new in any way in the industry. There's been carbon headed clubs back as far, I think, as almost the 80s. There were carbon headed clubs. There were carbon face clubs. There were, you know, so there has been carbon around, but to your point, it's apples and oranges in terms of how it's made and B, what it does for the golfer. I mean, most importantly, obviously the performance aspect has never been really something that carbon clubs were known for in the past. If you think back to whenever those came out, they never took the world by storm. Nobody really preferred them over the metal counterparts that were around at that time. And really, part of the reason for that is, you know, there was no understanding really of how to deliver ball speed back then. The faces were thick, they were slow. And so you're basically playing with a rigid face that's just made out of a different material. And there were some benefits in terms of maybe you can get lower CG and things like that because the carbon is lighter. But what we're doing here is delivering an entirely different sort of impact position for the golf ball. So it's a much lighter face. It's much thinner face than those carbon faces have been in the past. So it's flexible, it's fast, and it's saving a lot more weight versus whatever you're replacing it with, whether it's tie or something else. So that's the difference. And I think golfers are going to notice that right away. I think the other thing too, that people are going to notice is how it sounds and feels different from those clubs. I think, again, there weren't very, very good reviews on sound and feel in those carbon clubs from before. And I think one of the things that we're the most proud about on this club is how great it feels and sounds. And we're getting a bunch of positive feedback from tour players already early doors on that. And we know, again, from our player testing that the club sounds fantastic for all sort of different swing speeds and golfer skill levels.
Now, the one thing that you've been able to carry over, you know, obviously in the sim technology, you guys managed to do a lot of neat things as far as the shape of the club. You were able to keep a lot of the inertia characteristics in these clubs, particular advantages of how it works in concert with all the other new aspects of it.
Yeah, I think one of the things that, you know, where the sim technology, the shape and motion technology has helped us out on the Stealth product is maintaining good aerodynamics. Because one of the things that was an issue early on when we were prototyping and back in the old days when we had some of those Japan products was with the bigger faces, you typically have a big, pretty big aero penalty. And so having done all the aerodynamics work in the wind tunnel and all the theoretical work we had done on sim and understanding how shape can really impact speed enabled us to essentially maintain or even slightly improve the aerodynamics over sim 2 and sim with this product. And that's a huge achievement when you think that the face of the Stealth Plus driver is 20% bigger than the original sim driver was. So again, getting the good at aerodynamics and having that asymmetric sole geometry with the weight back again helps our MOI as well.
And you've got multiple options in here, obviously, to suit a lot of different players and brought back maybe some features that have been in other clubs in the past as far as some of the movable weighting and so forth. Details on that?
Yeah, so I mean, one of the things that we wanted to do is bring back the movable weight for sure. That was a big thing that was on our radar. Unfortunately, we weren't able to include it in Sim 2 because of the way that we made the face in Sim 2. If you remember, we had that machined back face and that face cup design, which again, very innovative. But one of the issues there was if you put the track in there, we had no access to machine the back of the face. The CNC machine literally can't get back in there. So we had to abandon it for a year essentially and not have movable weight in the driver for 1 year. So when we had an opportunity with Stealth to bring it back with the carbon face, now you're obviously not machining the back of the face. So it's an entirely different construction of the head. we're able to put the track back. And that's something that's been really well received by a lot of people. I think a lot of people assumed that we had like walked away from Mobile Way and everything, but obviously that's couldn't be further from the truth. It was literally just a necessity of a certain construction that we were using. Now that it's back, I think a lot of golfers are going to enjoy that. Certainly our tour players are already enjoying that, the fact that they can dial it in. And you'll see that too when these drivers come out on tour. You'll see the players have the weight in slight different settings. And you also reference other technologies. Obviously, this is packed with stuff, and we don't talk about a lot of them. The through slot speed pocket. We obviously have the 2-degree loft sleeve in there.
We almost take those for advantage now. We take it for granted.
Yeah,
like for granted. For sure.
Exactly. We don't even talk about really the shape and motion technology in any of our communication really either. It's there if you look at it. Obviously, you see that kind of higher crown asymmetric sole still in there. Again, it's not something that necessarily talk about. Because we want people to focus on what's new and what's really delivering the additional performance over last generation's product.
And I guess there's going to be some cool features too, as far as customization
and
people will be able to look at things. So while the red face is attractive, a lot of people will like that. There's going to be a little something different for others.
Absolutely. Yeah. We, you know, hopefully the red face will be pretty popular in Canada. So that's, you know,
should
thumbs
be
up on that one. But yeah, we are going to offer a My Stealth program as well. It's actually on the My Stealth Plus driver, and you're going to be able to customize a lot of aspects of the head, which is really cool. You mentioned the face. We're going to offer the face in 6 different colors. So if you don't like the red and you want something that's a blue, or your sports team is orange or whatever, you're going to be able to get that different face color in there. In addition to that, you're going to be able to also get different crown cosmetics. We currently have a satin carbon on the top. You're going to be able to get that in gloss if you want. You're going to be able to remove the T-bug if you want nothing on the top of the club. One option that's been popular with MySim 2 is kind of a what we call like a murdered out look, like all black. So you're going to be able to do that as well on this one, where you're going to have a black and gray face with all black decals and have it super stealthy looking. And also one of the cool things that I'm excited about as well is we're going to offer it also with the chalk paint. So if you want that old last kind of like a sim type of look to it, where the top line is in the chalk paint, you're going to be able to get that too on this product. So that's another kind of cool little feature that we're going to be able to offer through this program. And obviously full customization with all the different shafts that we have in custom, all the different grips. So, you know, again, if you count all that in, it's like millions of combinations.
Yeah. And how much has that segment grown for you guys? I mean, obviously it's become important. People are investing, you know, a fair number of dollars in their golf equipment. And they want it to be, you know, like them. They want it to reflect their personality. Yeah. So how much has that grown for you guys?
Tremendously. Yeah. It's been, I mean, if you sort of factor in just regular custom as well, the percentage of custom every year is going up significantly in terms of, you know, it's always been a thing with irons. I would say it's been a strong thing with irons, but that continues to climb as well. But definitely with drivers, I mean, it's, you know, nowadays with shaft options being out there, so many different options, people understanding more about that. And now with this last year, with having the MySim 2, people being able to customize it and really getting the weight, you know, looking the way you want it to is becoming big as well. So it's definitely an area that from our company standpoint, we're focusing on more and more. Obviously, seen in other categories, we've done the My Spider for a while. We've done the My MG wedges. So we're going to continue to go down that road of giving, you know, golfers more opportunities to make the club really theirs and make it something that they enjoy connecting with sort of emotionally as well as how it performs. So it's an exciting area, and we're continuing to push forward there.
All right. One last thing here, and I'll let you get out of here. Obviously, we're talking about drivers, but, you know, fairways are there as well. And there's obviously some advantages as far as this material for use in fairways.
Yeah, fairways has been, you know, we've really done some great work, I think, going into 2022 with fairways. And sometimes they get overshadowed a little bit by the driver story, which is totally fair. But I think if anybody's looking for a fairway wood in 2022, we have some incredible stuff coming out. We both in the tie and the steel clubs, we're offering something really unique. The steel fairway is actually getting a brand new crown concept called 3D carbon crown, where the crown of the club actually wraps over the sides of the club essentially. And so you're going to see a lot more carbon usage, and it's really enabled us to make that club incredibly forgiving. So we're taking that weight that we're saving and putting it forward and back in the club. And so making that inertia higher, making it super stable and keeping the CG very, very low to really make, you know, what is a hard shot for golfers, the fairway woods off the deck, especially, are tough shots, making those shots a lot easier. So I'm excited about that. On the Thai fairway side, honestly, this has maybe been the best launch that I've seen with our tour players in terms of just out of the gate, loving how it looks, how it performs. It's launching higher than our previous Thai product. It's spinning still very low, so you get that incredible distance off of it. And I think it just looks better. And we have a really cool new alignment system that you kind of have to see it to understand it, but it's just this little lasered line base, which makes it so easy to line up. It's almost like when you get that nice putter that just sits perfect for you behind the ball, it's kind of sits like that. And golfers are, we're already getting comments on how much people are enjoying that. And I think again, with tour and with good players, that kind of feature is really going to make the difference, I think, for a lot of golfers.
Well, it's an exciting time. Obviously, I know you're a super creative guy. So obviously having new products and new materials to play with opens up a whole new era for you. So looking forward to seeing what these do in 2022 and what you guys come up with beyond that.
Cool. Thank you. Yeah, it's been a wild ride to get to this point, and we couldn't be more excited about what 2022 is in store for us.
Thank you, Tomo, again for coming on the podcast. He's avoided me, I believe, every single time. I think I got him once.
Maybe. One time, I think, yeah.
Yeah, I thought so. I think this is his third time on. That's fair. I get it. It happens. Whatever.
Those West Coast guys, it's always hard to schedule those interviews. They come in
busy and surfing.
Yeah, that's it.
And living the lifestyle out there in California.
Oh, I did one with Matt Bovey, just for some other content to, as their director of product creation for irons. And it took 3 attempts to get that one done. So scheduling sometimes can certainly be an issue, that's for sure.
Well, maybe that could be one of our New Year's resolutions, Scott. We can come up with getting both of us in these interviews and being better with our scheduling. But I came up with a little bit of a game, and it's all basically right. That it's around New Year's resolutions, Scott. And here's how it's going to work. We're each going to give each other some names, and you have to give what this person's New Year's resolution should be, or you think actually is. Pretty straightforward. You have any questions, any thoughts, any concerns, Scott, before we get going?
No, I'm scared, but I'll have to get my brain around it since I haven't really been thinking about golf for a while. But
yeah, and like fun. I like to do this a lot because usually there's a little bit of a drama that can apply to these. I went easy on you. It's early in the new year. I don't want to get you all stressed out in the new year. A couple more grays on your head. So why don't I get going? I'll give you a name. You give what you believe their New Year's golf resolution, or maybe not. Maybe you can go a different way. It's up to you. Their New Year's resolution should be. So your first name is Phil Mickelson. What's his New Year's resolution?
His New Year's resolution is to hit more bombs by trying to bring his clubhead speed up and trying to chase Bryson for clubhead speed just for kicks so he can start chirping Bryson on social
interesting
media.
See, like you said that and I completely believe it. I could see that happening doing it, being like, you know what, at 50 I'm gonna lead the tour in driving somehow.
Yeah,
even though he
no matter what I shoot, I won
no
the
matter
PGA
where
last year,
it goes.
So
yeah that's pretty good. I like that. Phil's an interesting one for this year of like, what are we going to get out of Phil? And I said it last year. Unfortunately, the PGA was great, but I feel like it delayed us from putting him in the booth more. Yeah. And I do wonder if things go south, if he does the same again. And I don't know how he doesn't just keep doubling down because, hey, I was playing so bad for so long and then I won the PGA championship. Why can't I find lightning in a bottle twice? So I don't know. This is an interesting year, but hey, he's back at the Tournament of Champions. What was that, first time in 20 years or something?
Yeah, something
played up
like
this
that.
15
yeah.
years.
Yeah,
interesting. So all right. Who do you got for me?
Let's start with one of our favorites, Rory McIlroy.
It's a good one. I think Rory's New Year's resolution is to really double down on just being himself. And he obviously tried to build in this cut last year and everything along those lines. And then he realized, hey, I'm really good with what I do already. Why don't I just keep being me? And I think his New Year's resolution is reminder that I'm Rory effing McIlroy, and that's it. Like, anytime things aren't going well, I have four majors. I have everything I need. I'm Rory McIlroy. I'm going to go out there and I'm going to walk with that swagger and I'm going to win this week. And I think if he does that, I truly do believe we're in for a big year from Rory. And I might look into the books and see if there's any good odds on him winning a major this year. It's got to turn. Maybe that first year, kind of in that you're in that first year, the kid's a little bit older, you know, maybe it's settled down, but who knows? Maybe they got another one on the way. You never know. Maybe life doesn't ever slow down for Rory McIlroy, but that's Rory's New Year's resolution.
I like it.
All right. Your second person is Brooke Henderson. What is her New Year's resolution?
When I think about it, for Brooke, New Year's resolution, I think the New Year's resolution that she should have, maybe she's thinking about in her mind, is get rid of the word hope out of her vocabulary and turn it into make it happen. Much like Rory, just kind of go all out and just say, you know, don't make it wishy-washy. Just say, I'm going to win. Not I hope. I know she's trying to be polite. You know, I hope this happens. I hope this happens or whatever. I think I'd like to see a little bit of a fiery side in her, a little bit more determined. She's got it. We know that. We see her get frustrated sometimes with shots and doing certain things, but you know, she's such a nice person that she tries not to show it. And she's trying to, you know, maintain her image as much as possible. But I'd like for her to say, I'm getting rid of the word hope and I'm putting in the word to do more than anything.
I think it would be awesome to just see her walk down the fairway with just a scowl on. Like, I'm going, get out of my way.
Exactly.
I'm going to kill all of you here. And you do wonder, but you hear about it in all sports, right? Like, you got that 6'5 hockey player where you're like, if he had a mean side, he could take over this league. And it just doesn't have a mean side and you can't just create it. And I wonder, like, you know, I like the idea of taking out the hope side of things and doing the will. But like, can she be something she isn't? I don't know. Maybe is the image, and no one will within that inner circle will ever answer that. Is the image the truth? And I'll be honest, any interaction I've had with her family is like, they're all the nicest people. Oh, yeah. So it'd be so hard. Like, I can't see it, but yeah. I think those small pieces where it's like, I'm going to that language change is a really good idea.
Yeah, I think it's just the intention. And while it might not be her New Year's resolution, it's my New Year's resolution for her to hear that word hope less. And you know what? Take advantage of those opportunities that she has and just go all out.
I like it.
All right. On the female side of it, I've got one for you. Jessica Korda. Obviously, she had an amazing year in 2021. It's hard to really top that. But, you know, how would you? What would be your resolutions?
I think my New Year's resolution is to continue to show that I'm the best in the world and not the best women in the world. I'm one of the best in the world. And how I'm going to do that, you know, I can get into my different objectives that I will do it, but like, I want to be recognized by the end of the year as not just being the best woman, not just being this hot streak. I want to be one of the best in the world. I want to actually find a way to compete with men at some point. I don't know how I'm going to do it, but like, I think she's one of the best in the world. I think everybody should, if they didn't look at last year, you're crazy. Continue to show it, but not just the best, one of the best in the women's game. Give me one of the best in the world, because that's the credit she deserves.
Yeah, and you know what? On that same vein, I think less about being a best golfer and being one of the best athletes in the world.
Oh, yeah. That family's disgusting. Like, it's crazy. Like, quick pause. Like, what a piss off, right? Like, like, you got what? Both parents were Olympians, right? Sister, she wins the Olympics. She's one of the best golfers in the world. Her sister, forever, same thing. One of the best, still really, really good golfer. Brother's an Olympian tennis player. Like, just freaks.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's
not fair.
It is. But you know, I think she's got an opportunity. She's got the tools to push the sport forward and to push the face of women's athletes forward, which I think we need more and more of that all the time. So, you know, if she's prepared to kind of take on that mantle, then I think she's ready for it.
I think one of the cooler moments from that PNC, I don't know if you saw on Instagram, where she asked for the photo with Tiger.
Yeah.
And she's just straight up nerding out about it. And Tiger knows who she is. And I understand how that dynamic went down because the cameras are out. And I really hope Tiger ended up finding her later and just having a good conversation one-on-one, because clearly she's a huge fan, but he could do a lot for her game just by, you know, talking about what he's done and the things he's taught other people. And it's not as big of a threat to him to maybe give some of those secrets over to somebody like her. So I thought it was one of the coolest moments of the weekend for me. And just watching, you know, she's her, still a her golf action.
Yeah. You know, what's cool though, too, is, you know, in that same vein, you know, she's been around, you know, top athletes her whole life,
Yeah.
So for her to be starstruck and, you know, for it to come out as genuine, as far as how she was saying it and being blushing and the whole
deal, she was whatever. So you could hear it in her voice.
Yeah, just flustered, which is amazing. So that just ingratiates her more to me as someone, you know, who follows the sport and going, hey, you know what, that just shows that, you know, while it would be very easy for her to have a large ego, that she's just a golf fan in the end, right?
Pretty cool. It was pretty cool. All right. Your next person, their New Year's resolution, Brian Crawford. He is the RBC Canadian Open Tournament Director. This one might be tough.
I think the resolution here is, you know, given whatever circumstances are going to get presented to you, you know, the hope is that obviously the Canadian Open does happen this year. And his resolution basically is to do everything possible to make that happen and to make it as a memorable event as possible. And maybe at the same time, you know, dig into whatever barriers are there and try to get past them and try to go, you know what, this is a great event. It's an amazing event. It's an amazing vehicle to showcase the game of golf in the country. Maybe there's other ways within that organization with that event that they can do some other things that, maybe even if this event doesn't happen, which, you know, fingers crossed it does, that they can use that platform to do some things that are good in the community, both for golf and non-golf.
Man, 3 years would be real tough. Two's been tough, but
yeah,
3 years would be real tough. I feel for somebody like that. That's like, I don't think people truly understand how difficult it would be to work on something like that, which is so much work,
yeah,
and feel like you're getting so close, and it's almost like the carrot and the stick, and you found a way to get closer to that carrot, and then somebody just kicks it as far as they can.
Yeah.
And you're like, all right. And then you're never actually getting there. And there's like, I read this psychological study about like someone, you always need to be looking forward to something. And you should set different things, like setting a vacation, for example. You have that thing to look forward to. And I've talked about on here about that's why the pandemic's been so difficult for a lot of people, is they don't have that end date or that thing they can look forward to specifically. And that's basically, I would love to get him on in the Canon moment and just hear like, how hard has this been for you, and hear what he thinks? Cause it's gotta be difficult. You gotta be the face to all those staff to be like, hey, you gotta keep going, the leader. Let's try to get him on at some point over the next couple of weeks. I would love to hear his thoughts. Cause I think it's gotta be a difficult couple of years.
Yeah, for sure. Unfortunately. But hopefully we've got some things to look forward to, and, you know, it's a little bit different situation than maybe Scott Pritchard, who, you know, when we had him on and, you know, they're, schedule was changing, and remember he talked about 7 or 8 different plans for a season, but they managed to pull something off. This is much harder in the fact that it's one big, huge, massive event that you know, there's so many moving pieces to, and you know, we definitely feel for everybody on their teams over there for both the both the national championships, for sure. All right, next one, on that same vein, you know what, dealing with the PGA Tour, while it's been, you know, it's been a nice high road once they've sort of got back and playing, there's challenges as well for the top tours in the world. So Jay Monahan, the commissioner of the PGA Tour, what's his resolutions going to be?
He's going to erase all the history that Greg Norman ever existed on the PGA Tour. But in all seriousness, I think it's just like, we are the best tour in the world. We're going to pay people the most money. There's going to be zero reason for anybody to want to go play on this rival tour. I don't know how I'm going to do it, but like, I want to make sure that I check every box. If they have a private jet to get them to and from events, all right, I'm going to find a way to get private jets for our players to and from events. If their paychecks are this, all right, what do I got to do that? What sponsors do? Like, no one is going to beat the PGA Tour. And maybe it's wrong. Like, maybe it's setting it too high where, like, you know, there's only so much money to be had that if somebody else has bigger backers, then unfortunately it is what it is. I hope that isn't the case, but I think that's what he's going to do. And my problem I have with it is I think the thing that will be forgotten is the product that they actually sell and not the people that are delivering the product. They're almost putting so much into those players, right? That they're forgetting that the product has staled. We've all agreed on that, right? Like, where I know they're talking about, like, at some point, any tournament, you're going to be able to see every single shot. But like, we've been doing this podcast for 3 years and we've been talking about that. Where is it? Right? Like, where are all these things? And that's my worry, is that my resolution as Jay is to focus on these players that nobody's like, am I getting too competitive to lose? Like, I don't want to lose to a different tour versus, hey, can I just focus on what we do best and make it even better, make the product better, that more people actually want to watch it versus worrying about who's out there. At the end of the day, a great tournament is what's going to get people watching, right? If there's back and forth lead changes between Harris English and Patrick Reed on a Sunday, and it's going back and forth and there's birdies happening left and right, the numbers are going to, people are going to come to it and watch it. It doesn't necessarily need to always have the Tiger Woods and the Phil Mickelsons there. So I think his resolution is in line with what I believe he's actually thinking about, but I don't know if it necessarily what he should be thinking about and focusing more on the product that they put out each week on TV.
Well, it's a good point. And if we look at something that they did from a, you know, front-facing standpoint with the FedEx points list and talking about points versus the money list, I think in the end, if you look at how everything is sort of played out, if they did more things that didn't focus on just money and took care of a lot of other things, like you said, about the product, of, you know, the community aspects and all that sort of things, then the money can sort of happen and not be the focus. And not that they're getting away from it or hiding, but I think if it's just all about money all the time, then I think that's going to be a hard sell to a lot of people. If it's all about money, 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 versus, as you said, fan experience, TV experience, all those things that, you know, while they do take money, it's not always focused on that as being the most important thing.
Other ways to generate revenue while creating a better product. Don't, like, we've talked about on here, would you pay $50, $100 a year to be able to see every shot and follow whoever you want and avoid commercials and all of that? Absolutely. What I would pay to have each group has a boom mic guy that walks around with them on the tees and you can listen to all of that. And if it is, you know, I like, those are the things that you need. Like, get real creative, because if you don't think those, that other team isn't thinking about that type of stuff or whatever, they're going to try all that stuff. And the reason why is they're probably going to pay players a lot of money so that they can, but they are going to find ways to get that revenue. And it's a tough gig. Yeah. I get it.
It is a tough gig. And I think the one thing that sort of hampers the PGA Tour, and, you know, that was part of what happened over the years with some of the things they had with some of the TV contracts, is that some of the contracts and things that they had were long-term. So as a result of it, it handcuffed them. And unfortunately, you know, the game and the fan experience and what people want changes, you know, sometimes weekly. And, you know, if you all of a sudden sign some sort of contract that, you know, cements you into something that's 10 years long, you know what, by the end of that, you're not going to really be able to be in a position to address what the modern needs are. So while it's nice to sign long-term contracts for stability, sometimes you need a little bit of flexibility in there to really be able to address what's happening in real time.
I like it.
All right.
We got a couple more. You are me. Is my New Year's resolution? It doesn't mean, it can be golf, it cannot be golf. Let's keep it golf for fun. What is it, Scotty?
My New Year's resolution for you is that you focus less on quick fixes for your game and understand that just because you go out and have a few bad shots one day that you haven't lost it, or you have three good shots on the day that you have it. And the fact that, you know, you're going to have to stick to things long-term if you want long-term success.
I like that. I think that's really good. My New Year's resolution for you is I need to get my competitive juices going and know I belong there. Like I like confidence almost. Like I'm going to be confident in what I'm doing out there. I got to play the forward tees now. No one's going to outdrive me up there. Let's take advantage of it. And let's try to pick up a win. I know we don't set objective results as objectives. Those are, you know, we've set the things we're going to work on that we can't control, and results you can't control, but hey, I can control the confidence I have going into it. And when Stefan says, how you feel about your game going into this tournament, it's not, oh, I've been working so hard on other things. It's feeling good. I'm going to focus on this and I'm going to compete and not take myself out of it on the first hole with a nine.
I 100% agree. I mean, that is definitely been a flaw over the years, that it's been really easy to have excuses and just say, you know, well, I don't really want to focus on it. It's not really that important or whatever, but, you know, kind
of defense mechanism.
It is for sure. So I think you're right. Going back, maybe turning back the clock in my brain, you know, 30 years to maybe when I felt like I was more competitive and went to tournaments because I wanted to win tournaments rather than just going for the enjoyment of it. Whether you get a little bit of practice in or a lot of practice in, doesn't matter. Try to make sure to win that. So yeah, good observation. I appreciate that. And definitely I will cement that in the back of my brain. Maybe like the front. It. Maybe the front.
There we go. I think we both nailed each other way too good there on what we thought our resolution.
Spend far too much time together talking clearly. About golf. Clearly. So, yeah.
All right. But we do have the Century Tournament Champions. We have a year-long bet going, and each week we pick a player. Whatever they win is the money that goes into our overall money won for the year. Whoever has the most money at the end of the year wins. You can't pick the same player twice. Can't pick the same player each week either. So small field, obviously. Yep,
39 players.
Really quickly, looking over it, what is the most shocking name on here for you that you're like, oh, they won?
Erik van Rooyen. It's like, oh, yeah. I couldn't even tell you what he won. I know he did, but I forget what it is.
I agree with you. When I think of him, I think of him at the PGA Championship, just smashing up tee blocks.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Right. So I think that's a good one. Mine is Seamus Power. When? Do you remember? Like, it must have been.
Was he part of the team event?
What? No, because that was.
No, that was Leishman.
Cam Davis and Leishman, right? So, or not Cam Davis. Cam Smith. I always get the two screwed up and they don't look anything alike, but they're from the same place. Did you also quickly, did you see what happened with Gino Bonelli?
By the way,
Barbasol, there we go. So that's why I said some extra. Gino Bonelli trying to get to Hawaii.
No, I miss that.
Somehow they missed going through custom. They're going with their two kids. One's 1 year old. So they were supposed to fly to Dallas to Hawaii. Now they got to fly from Dallas to Miami for some reason. Ooh. And then back to Dallas and then to Hawaii. It doesn't make any sense to me, but like with a 1 year old, I couldn't even imagine that.
No.
And I think they got a 5 year old or something like that on top of that. Like, ugh. Horrible. That's but yeah, let's, good. Let's pick our players. I guess Harris English won this last year.
Apparently.
I learned. I don't know. Why don't you go first? Who's your player you want to start your year off on a good note, on a high?
I mean, there's players that I want to do well, but the ones that I think are going to do well, I can't shy away from Justin Thomas. I know he put a lot of prep in the last week, getting ready for this tournament. He's serious about getting his 2022 going with a win. He's obviously one of the favorites as well. And I think he's my guy for the week. And I know I haven't picked him yet. So this is my time to pick him.
See, that's where my head is at. Is that
do you waste a pick?
Do I don't want to. Yeah. Like a guy like that, where it's like, hey, but this tournament is worth just as much. And does it actually make sense strategy wise to pick a guy in a tournament like this where there's less people out there, but hey, the money is the money, mm-hmm. right? And that the big names might come out. So what I'm going is I'm actually kind of following that strategy. It's one of the favorites this week. And the reason why I'm picking this guy is I think he screams Hawaii. He screams laid back, gonna have a good time, but I'm still gonna win the golf tournament. Hoff. I'm picking Victor Hoff. I am. Yeah. So I don't think he's gonna think, oh, I shouldn't be here. There's some names on there that I was like, maybe this is the time, you know, you grab a Sam Burns who is playing really well, or you grab a Jason Kokrak, who it is his first time, I believe, coming to this tournament. But you know, they got that mindset. You know, I'm not picking a Joel Damon. I might, if I like Joel Damon might come dead last for this tournament just from not caring. I'm on Hawaii. I'm having a couple cocktails. I don't care.
It's bonus golf, right?
Yeah, it's bonus golf for someone like that. I think Hovland's going to fit. So we got Hovland versus JT this week. We'll see who picks up some money. And the best part is, I can't lose. I've had 2 weeks where
you're going to get money. You're going to get money no matter what.
You've had money. You've had a great start to your season. You got 400,000 plus in the bank. You've made a paycheck every single week. I got one big paycheck, but you know, it's tough. Times have been tough in between, right? Going into Christmas with two missed cuts, basically.
Tough to pay the caddy, man.
I'm gonna pay rent this week. I'm gonna be paying rent this week at Jupiter, Florida. Anything else on the go, Scotty, before we hit the mailbag and wrap things up? Anything that you caught your eye recently?
No, I think the biggest thing is this is, like I said, it's bonus golf to get into this. We'll really see how things play out when we get to the Sony and we get a full field in there. A little bit more news coming out. We saw in December of the PGA Tour allowing releases for players that are going to play in the event in Saudi Arabia, which conflicts with Pebble Beach on February 3rd to 6th. They added that field today. Tony Finau, Cam Smith, Patrick Reed are going to go play there. Reed's played every single one of them, so no surprise with that. But those players are now obligated as well to play the Pebble Beach event over a period of time. I tweeted about it
the next couple
ago.
Years or something. Yeah.
So I've almost forgot about it by now. Otherwise, that's about it. I mean, I'm more interested in some of these equipment introductions this week. Obviously, the TaylorMade introductions. We've got Callaway. We've got Cobra coming up in a couple of weeks. No PGA show for me, but the PGA show is still scheduled to take place in Florida, which is going to be interesting to see how that plays out, given the current health situation and who's going to end up going there and doing some things. I know a few manufacturers are not going to be there. So it's going to be a very different intro year for new equipment and how it comes out. And as you said, for here in Ontario, the largest province in Canada, the next few weeks or so, we're not going to see a lot of that indoor access. You know, retail will have 50% access, so people can still get into to test some stuff, but it's going to be a little bit more limited. So it'll be interesting to see how this product introduction season happens and whether product will be available as well, which is, I'm still talking to people who ordered irons last August who still haven't gotten them from some manufacturers.
Yeah, I had a buddy that was going to order some late October, maybe, hoping to have them for, he's going to Florida, I guess, this month. Just got big into golf this year, wants new clubs. Nope. They were out until February. So he's like, what am I supposed to do? So I don't know, buy some down there. You probably have a better shot down there buying some PGA Superstore. Who knows? Maybe not. Yeah. I don't know. You have no idea right now. That's lot to look at. Why don't we wrap it up with a quick mailbag? We didn't actually post this yet. We will be getting back to that, but I think you had a cool idea for the mailbag this week.
I just figured since we get questions in from people all the time, maybe it's a chance to just ask each other a question for the mailbag. So I'll start out. My biggest thing for you would be, what do you want to change about your golf habits in 2022? So this is not really a resolution so much, but are there things that you maybe have done last year or the years past that you want to change in 2022?
Yeah. So last couple of years, 5 years, I've always had a golf membership, right? And okay. Yep. This year I'm not. I'm going public, all right. I just want to play everywhere, but I really want to focus on just practicing more and being comfortable with, like, I can go to the range 4 days a week. It's only an hour, less burden of leaving at home, and then maybe play one or two times a week if I'm lucky. But really want to focus on practice, really want to work on the things we're working on. But I think you nailed it, is focusing on the right drills and not necessarily the result. I think we all go to the range with, oh, I'm going to hit a draw here. It doesn't work. Okay, I'll try this weird habit. Oh, it hit a draw this time, but it's not necessarily going to be next time. So I'm just going to really focus on the practice this year and be comfortable knowing that, like, hey, I'm not going to be able to play as much potentially, just at least and find a way to enjoy the game. And then when I do play, I'm ready to play, right? Like I my game is in a good place that I feel comfortable going out and playing.
Did you ever have a feeling kind of when you had membership sometimes that maybe you're just kind of going through the motions sometimes where you're going, I'm going to play. Maybe I don't really want to, but I'll just go anyways just to get out and do some.
You heard me at this year. Like at the end of the year, I didn't want to play golf, but I had to go play because I didn't have a place to go practice. I could go play for what I've already paid for. Yeah. But at the end of the round, I'm still shooting the highest scores I've ever shot. And I have no idea, no confidence, no idea where the ball's going. Like, what's the fun in that? At least if you get to practice a little bit more and focus, like I'm going to buy a range membership somewhere instead and just focus on that. Then at least I know what I'm doing and I have a feel when I'm going out there, even if it is at a limited time. And that hopefully means golf will be a little bit more enjoyable than the opposite where it's like, I'm supposed to enjoy this, but like, I have no idea what I'm doing. I can't, I'm standing over each tee. I have no idea where the ball's
going. Yeah. It can't be any fun if you're, I mean, we've all been through it or whatever, but it's no fun if you're standing in the middle of the fairway going, what am I doing here? And you're only on the six hole, right? Or you start that back nine and you get to like the 12th hole and you're like, oh damn, I got to play 6.5 more holes. And
yeah, that's the worst.
I'd rather turn around and want to go back.
Yeah. And then you feel bad because you're probably like, when I go and play, we always have a game going. You feel bad because like, clearly letting down a partner probably, or you're like not having any fun at this point that you want to turn back. Now you can't. So it's just,
As a young parent too, you know, you also feel the risk, you know, I could be spending these hours back home with my little one and my wife.
And you're told you could have been spending those hours back home. Exactly. So there's the guilt and then the, you know, the guilt that's given to you on top of it. So yeah, it's a good one. All right. My question for you is, you know, you're going on, what is this, the 100th year of you playing golf or
something like that? Yeah.
Yeah. Somewhere Centennial. Close to that. But in all seriousness, I would love to know, what do you wish you didn't take for granted when you were younger playing the game? Like if you could go back, if there's almost that piece of advice, what would you have given that young Scott?
I think, I mean, there's a couple of things. I mean, one, I was fortunate at least that I didn't take it for granted as far as, you know, having nice equipment and growing up at a country club or whatever, because that didn't happen. You know, my first set of golf clubs is a set of 1971 Star Flights that were used. So, you know, I didn't have that situation, but I would say probably early on, I probably got a little bit too upset and I probably wasn't good enough to get mad. That would be probably the biggest thing. And I probably spent more time getting frustrated than finding a way to get better. And I think that happens over the years for anyone, you know, they get the maturity and realize that, you know, just getting mad and upset and slamming a club, that's not solving anything. It feels like a nice outlet, and that maybe you're getting that anger out or whatever, but it's not making you, you know, play better more than anything.
Do you think because of your upbringing, that is why, like, you literally, like, you have clubs that were given to you and we're both very lucky. We're gifted a lot of golf stuff.
Yeah.
And you've had clubs that were, you know, gifted to you from manufacturers for testing or whatever that you have that are probably 15 years old and like you'll keep almost everything. Do you think it comes from that feeling of like, this is a gift, I want to cherish it. Like I didn't have these things when I was younger.
Maybe a little bit. I mean, I think I think that's a perception that maybe you have or other people have, that I have this huge archive of
clubs. No, you don't have a huge archive, but you have a lot of...
I have some and things that I've kept over the years, but I've also been very cognizant of giving a lot of that stuff away, of putting... realizing and recognizing that other people are in that situation that I was as a teenager, where I didn't have new clubs and didn't have the opportunity to do that. And I can remember specifically a young guy that was a Special Olympian that I knew, and I was having a discussion with him, and we were talking about his clubs, and he was playing golf at a fairly high level. And, you know, he described to me his wedges that he was playing with that basically had, you know, he sent me a picture. They had no grooves on them. I don't even know how he was playing or whatever. So cobbled together, you know, a set of wedges that I had, because again, do I really need another set of wedges or anything? And I think there's probably a little bit of thriftiness, maybe that Scottish upbringing, as far as, you know, hanging on to a few things. But most of the stuff that I hang on to are things that maybe have some sentimental meaning of some sort. But I think it's always good to, you know, recognize where you came from and stay as close to that as possible. And I think in Canada, we see that even within the top pros. Most of the pros that are playing and have made their way to the top part of the game didn't grow up with privileged circumstances. They're ones that had to really grind it out and work hard and do a lot of things. Although they had, you know, maybe didn't have as many opportunities, they made the most of them more than anything.
It's true. Well, those good questions. I liked it. Good start to the year, Scotty. It's 2022, year three of the podcast. We're talking different things we want to do this year, and everything, like the rest of the world, is up to the world of where they go. But hopefully we got some things. You know, at one point we got to get a golf trip going. We've been discussing that, and obviously the last 2 years have been put on hold, but big year, looking forward to it. A lot of different interviews, we got some big guests coming. Hopefully, I think our goal, one of our resolutions for the year, is we should try to get every one of those big Canadian golfers through the pod. We've had a lot of them. Let's try to get the rest of them on here. I need to at one point chat with Graham Dillette, apologize for this tweet I sent him a long time ago that he blocked me for, because all these people will like retweet him. I can't see it. Airing of grievances with him. Let's get over our past.
So we got to book him in for Festivus. Is that what we got to do?
Yeah, for Festivus. We need to. I'll apologize. We'll do it. I know we've been chatting with Mac to get him on here, but let's get through some more of them and really talk some more Canadian golf. Because hey, we're the number one podcast in Canada for a reason, are we not?
I love it. I love it. Looking forward to it.
All right, Scotty. Happy New Year, everybody. Thanks everyone for listening. We'll be back next week. We hope you enjoyed the interview. Thank you, Tomo, as well. Thank you, TaylorMade. Thank you, Flagstick. Any thank yous you want to give out?
Thanks to you. Thanks for coming back.
Thank you to you for having me. All right, we'll leave it there. Everyone, enjoy your new year. We'll chat with you next week.